Marty Bird and his wife live right on the water at the Lake of the Ozarks. Their house is in a remote spot surrounded by woods and nature. But Wendy isn't happy here. They moved in a hurry from Chicago, and the transition has been rocky.
We'll look deeper for what's here.
I know what's here, trust me. It's the shit you run away from. It's pickups and warm beer and low expectations. It's grown men with bourbon on their breath who lean in a little too close and say, my, how you've grown.
Ouch. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And today we're giving Ozark, a new Netflix series, the screen time treatment. Let's start with a little synopsis. Marty and Wendy, played by Jason Bateman and Laura Linney, are not in the Ozarks by choice. Marty is a financial advisor who's gotten in over his head laundering money for a Mexican drug cartel. Marty makes a plea for his life that hinges on the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, a place where tourists with cash descend on miles upon miles of shorefront property totally hidden from view. Marty promises that in the Ozarks, he is sure to find lots of places to turn around suitcases full of drug money. This turns out to be harder than he expected and much more dangerous. Chris Mundy, would you say that's an accurate description?
I think you nailed it, yeah.
Chris is the runner for the show, which is like a writer and project manager combined. So, Chris, talk to me about your vision for Ozark.
Someone named Bill Dubuque actually wrote the very first episode, and Bill is from St. Louis and grew up working in the Ozarks and going to the Ozarks. So the original framework, the setup that you just mentioned, it all came from Bill's brain. Thank God for Bill's brain. but for us, as we were tackling the rest of the series and the season, it was really about these people making increasingly bad decisions and underestimating what they're getting into and trying to somehow extricate themselves from the situation and continually making it worse, as we often all do.
Yeah, in fact, I have finished watching the first season and I'm not clear on how it could actually get worse from here.
We're busy starting to try to write the second season, and we're trying to figure out how it can get worse from here.
Because it has to, right? Unless it's like a 2-season show.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you also don't want to do the second season, have it just be like, it's just like season one, only worse. Now they have to launder more money. So, you know, we're trying to, it's sort of talking about the American dream, as it were, and what's myth and what's reality. And, you know, and at a certain point, if you're having all this drug money, is it different once you get institutionalized, you know, and do people care where that wealth came from, and what will you sacrifice to do it? And how do you keep your family together? So, you know, we're trying to hit on a lot of themes without being overly pedantic about it all.
You know, the show does start with this meditation in Marty's voice. You don't quite know what's happening on the screen in front of you. You're seeing sort of flashes of scenes that are going to be kind of fleshed out later. But he's meditating on what money actually is. And he comes to the conclusion, I mean, he's trying to sell something, we later realize. So this might not be a totally genuine speech, but he comes to the conclusion that money is a measure of something, that it's not just dollars and cents.
Yeah, he says it's a measure of your choices. You know, it's a measure of your choices. I'm going to work on a weekend instead of being at my kid's soccer game. Well, that's a choice. So that money, it might buy you more freedom, but then you also lost closeness with your son or daughter. So, you know, that's one of the things we posit underneath all the craziness that is happening on screen.
Talk to me about the choices of the characters in the Ozarks, particularly the locals Marty and his family encounter there.
I think you're probably speaking specifically about the Langmore family, which is sort of a low level, scrappy little crime family makes them sound too elevated in the world. What we wanted is for Marty to kind of continually underestimate, think that he had a handle on a situation and he actually didn't understand it as well as he thought. he was a little presumptuous, both in going to the Ozarks in the first place and then underestimating the people there. But of course, you know, we're in a crime show, so these people have to be, or they don't have to be, but they are, you know, somewhat vicious and somewhat calculating it in terms of what they're willing to do. So, you know, in that way, nobody comes off looking great in terms of their moral choices.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking more about the economic choices of that family. I mean, just if we have this setup about money as a measure of choice, the Langmore family and several of the other people we meet in the Ozarks, the owner of a struggling lodge, you know, I wouldn't see them as people with a whole heck of a lot of choices.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the woman, Rachel, who runs the lodge, I would say I think she does have a lot of choices, but she chose to stay with that place. I think she's sort of the most authentically of the place of all the characters we have on screen. I just think there's a lot of pride tied to the place, even though it's kind of getting a little dilapidated. I think the Langmores don't have a lot of choices, and I think it's a lack of education, certainly not a lack of smarts, but a lack of education, and sort of a few generations of the people around them putting low expectations on them, and them having a bit of ceiling on their entry into the workforce. So I think that is true. I don't think they have a ton of choices, or certainly no one's shown them a path to a lot of choices, which is something we wanted to play with. Obviously, Marty, who's Jason's character, is doing
Jason
criminal.
Jason Bateman, for those of us not on a first name basis.
Sorry.
No, just kidding.
But obviously he's doing, you know, criminal activities. But at the same time, I think, especially the character of Ruth, who we love so much, starts to glimpse a different world. And in this strange way, he's the first person who trusted her brain, not just her criminality. And
yeah, I mean, I hope it's not giving too much away to say Ruth initially wants to kill Marty.
Yes. Yeah. And that the push and pull of whether she does or does not, and how that changes, and what the smart play for her hopefully will continues through the year. I mean, hopefully in a way that's realistic and tense. But I do think that, you know, he trusts her in business because she's smart, and no one has had that faith in her. And I don't think that's unrealistic for someone who comes from her circumstance, which is too bad.
You know, I want to hear more from you about how Marty Bird and his family perceive the Ozarks, both the landscape and the people, because we are really seeing this place through their eyes.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's different. You know, it's funny, you played that clip of Laura Linney talking, and that's in the middle of a scene where both she and Jason Bateman's character are having a big fight. But she's denigrating the Ozarks right there. But what she's really getting at is actually, we're suddenly denigrating North Carolina. But her character is from Boone, North Carolina. And she sort of, we always think of her as a character that very much could have ended up like the Ruth character, but she left. And I think most of the people that she grew up with stayed. So I think she's speaking more to that. She's speaking more to her past than her present, but she's that the place worries her in her present.
When she talks about low expectations and warm beer.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what the birds think about the Ozarks is they see all the beauty around it, but they're not used to the nature of it. And we kind of tried to play with the idea of nature encroaching. It's sort of the dark underbelly of the beauty of the place. And I think that works on a physical level in the actual Ozarks or wherever you're telling your story. And then it also works on a personal level with your characters of what they show to the world and then what they're actually doing. And we wanted to juxtapose those.
Even though this is a totally visual medium, when I'm watching this show, the scenes all feel humid. And I'm curious how you created that physical sensation using images and sound.
It's very interesting. I'm glad you say that. I mean, you know, some of it is, you know, I can't actually even speak to how we do it physically. It's a feeling we wanted to evoke. When we started the show starts in May of the season, and the summer season in the Ozarks, where it becomes a very different place. You know, that the town they live in would be about 10,000 people during the off season. And, you know, you're getting hundreds of thousands of people in there once the season starts. So we wanted to have that feeling of summer and fun on the outside. And yet for the people, for Marty struggling to survive, it's that idea of when you have a million errands in the middle of the summer and you're running around doing them and everyone else is having fun and you're sweating like crazy because you're just trying to get everything done. And so we wanted to evoke that feeling. And there's something that's really good in terms of a thriller. If you think all the way back to something like Body Heat or something like that, where you just felt the anxiety through the heat. And we tried that early on. And then the story ends sort of in fall as the leaves are turning and the tourists have gone. And then hopefully there's sort of a darker, more somber feeling to the world.
Is the idea here of a place that's been forgotten, at least in the off season?
Oh, I think definitely. I mean, I think there's real issues. I think there's real issues of class that come into it. I mean, I think any place, wherever it is, you know, whether or not it's the Ozarks or whether or not it's, you know, the Hamptons that serve New York City people that go, the city people that go out. It's not just a Midwestern thing in any way, shape, or form. It's there's a real tension between the people that are there year round and then the people who kind of come in and act like it's a playground for them and don't respect it in the same way. And yet the people that live there are dependent on them for their income year round in a way. So I think it's a way to speak to those class differences without, you know, hitting the nail on the head too hard, to just let it be.
So where the Bird family fits in all of this is interesting because there's some tension between whether they are becoming locals, becoming part of this, at least in the worldview of the show, forgotten place, or whether they are like the tourists, whether they're breezing through, turning around the money and getting back out. The person who feels that tension, I think, most acutely is their teenage daughter, Charlotte. And I want to play some audio from a scene where she has just realized that a tourist she met and had a fling with has left without saying goodbye, without even telling her that he was leaving. Here she is looking for him.
Bryce?
No, thanks. Have you seen Zach?
He's pulling his boat out today.
Pulling it out?
Yep. Done for the season. He has, like, some work thing over Labor Day, so.
Now, one of the locals that Charlotte's befriended, actually part of the Langmore family that, unbeknownst to her, is trying to kill her dad, he's working as a boat mechanic, and he sees Charlotte. He tries to comfort her.
You know, they always leave, Charlotte. It's a difference between us and them. And you? I guess you're on us now.
I'm curious, Chris, you know, like, talk to me about the positioning of this family in this us versus them scenario of locals and tourists.
Well, yeah, I mean, that it's something we really wanted to play with. They came in with an attitude as if they were the tourists in some strange way, or as if they were coming down and Marty was kind of used the place to get what he wanted, you know, and help his family survive. Obviously it's not purely selfish. He's trying to survive. But, and yet once they do that, they're going to need to live there and be there. So they're neither insider nor outsider. And I think the sooner they accept the fact that this is their home, then the better their chances are at survival. And yet, you know, that the birds have two kids. There's Charlotte, who you played the clip of, who's 15, and they also have Jonah, who's 12. And, you know, Jonah is more intellectually curious and kind of trying to find whatever there is in there, and sort of he sees it as an adventure. And Charlotte sees her identity caught up in being sort of a Chicago city girl. And so she's going to have a harder time because she's not as open to the world in the same way. And so we just thought that was an interesting thing to play around with. And we thought that, again, their survival, accepting where they live and finding the good in where they live, for lack of a better term, is actually going to help them survive. And I think that's sort of instructive for any of us, anywhere we go.
I understand that Ozark was actually filmed in Georgia?
Yeah, in Atlanta.
Did you or anyone on the cast actually visit the Ozarks as part of research?
Yeah. And I'd been there as a kid because I grew up in Omaha. But we took a few trips, and I went there with Jason Bateman and people. And the woman, actually, Jordana, who plays Rachel, who owns the inn, actually went and stayed with a week with her family at the inn that is based on in the Ozarks, a place that Bill Dubuque, who wrote the pilot, used to work pumping gas on the dock during college. And once I hired a writing staff, all of us, the writers went down there, and the Missouri Film Commission helped us out and were incredibly gracious and smart, and they were just really, really helpful. And then we did do some film. We probably did 3 days of filming in the Ozarks. So there's some scenes with our people in the first two episodes that are all actually in the Ozarks proper. And then it's just some shots of the area that we used quite a bit. It's just for the rest of the series, you know, we would have had to go down in the middle of the high season of the Ozarks and trying to be shooting on the lake, where we would have needed to shut down huge swaths of places to control the shots, you know, and it would have been bad for business, I think.
Did anything about this place, the reality of the place, surprise you?
Not particularly, actually. I mean, I think it's the thing that's overwhelming about it is the sheer size of it. I mean, that lake is absolutely massive, and it's you know, they call it the Magic Dragon because it's really three rivers dammed up to make a lake. So there's all these, you know, these arms of the lake that go everywhere. You look at it above and it looks like a dragon. So the sheer scope of it was a little overwhelming, I think. But I think that was actually really helpful to us. That was another way for Marty to be overwhelmed.
And kind of lost in the landscape.
Exactly.
When KCUR Central Standard returns, we'll get reactions from an Ozark native and an arts critic. You can chime in too. What's your review of Ozark? And is it shaped by firsthand experience of rural Missouri, the lake itself? Call 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about the Netflix series Ozark, about a Chicago family that goes into hiding at the Lake of the Ozarks, a humid, woodsy, no man's land in the middle of Missouri. If you've seen the series, we want to know what you think of how the Ozarks come across in this show. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. I've been chatting with Chris Mundy, one of the show's creators. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I now want to get some local perspective. Melissa Lenos is a freelance arts critic for KCUR, and she teaches English at Donnelly College. Melissa, what do you think of Ozark?
I enjoyed watching it very much, and I found it really interesting from the perspective of somebody who's interested in location. So I was fascinated by the idea that the location was foregrounded in the way that it was, and then I was really interested.
What do you mean by foregrounded?
I think that by titling the show Ozark, if you think of something like Fargo, when you have the location in the title, you're kind of signaling to the audience that it's a critical part of the narrative.
I see. So what do you think, as a viewer, what do you think Ozark means? Is it shorthand for something here?
So that's what I was interested in. There's actually another media scholar named Miles McNutt who's done a lot of really interesting research on the idea of narrative as backdrop versus narrative as, or I'm sorry, place as narrative backdrop versus place as narrative engine. So if you think about a TV show that has a backdrop that's very visible and enticing, like think of something like Breaking Bad. The location is really dominant, but you could move Breaking Bad to pretty much any location and have the same story. But if the place becomes part of the narrative engine, with something like Fargo, it seems very important that it's taking place in Fargo. So I was interested to watch the show and see if Ozark does the same thing.
And does it?
I think that it diverges. I think that sometimes there are things like visual cues, but also character cues, like accents and ways that people are dressed.
Yeah, talk to me about the accents.
I am not an accent expert, but I was interested to see the split between the locals and the ways that they speak and the ways that they speak to each other versus the ways that they speak to the tourists and the bird family. And I feel like...
Can you describe that a little more for people who haven't seen the show?
It's a very distinctive... It seems to me to be a very distinctive white working class Midwest Southern accent that some people might bookmark as a redneck accent, right? So, and that is often used as shorthand for class.
And actually, that word, I mean, a very controversial word, it does come up in the show. I mean, one of the characters refers to the Lake of the Ozarks as, I'm quoting here, the Redneck Riviera.
Right. And I think that that's a convenient shorthand for storytelling, particularly if you are targeting a program like this to an audience who might not be familiar with the region and who might not be familiar with what it's like there and what it's like to be there, you can signal to the audience certain kinds of stereotypes and certain kinds of ways of presenting characters and the ways that they live that the audience will find recognizable. But for me, as somebody really interested in representation, that can eventually become dangerous.
Dangerous how?
Because what you're doing is you're reinforcing people's assumptions about what a region might be like without taking into consideration the personal experiences and concerns and values of individuals.
Does Chris's statement earlier on that part of what he was going for here was the idea of the bird family swooping in from Chicago and underestimating people, does that change your perspective at all?
It doesn't. I think it's something that develops as the series goes on. So in the first couple of episodes, I found some of the representations very concerning, but they do work to develop some of those characters and develop some of their perspectives as the series goes on.
So as you get to know them better, they're maybe less problematic or no?
I think that they can be perceived as less problematic. I would understand both perspectives. I could see somebody watching the entire series and still having a really serious problem with how some of the characters are portrayed. But I can also see viewing the whole thing and seeing it as development and also seeing it as set up for future seasons of character development, particularly with Ruth.
We're joined here also by a guy who grew up in the Lake of the Ozarks, not in the lake. I would say on the lake is probably more accurate. But before we get to his perspective, I want to take a call from Linda. She's calling from Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
What can you share?
Well, I like the series a great deal. I think the characters, the four main characters, are very well drawn. I found this series compelling and watched actually the whole thing in a couple of days, and spoke to some friends who said, "Wow, I just finished watching it too," and so they were equally excited about it and looking forward to the next season. I grew up going to the Ozarks on family vacations, and so I think the lake almost serves as another character. And while I guess all of the scenes are not local, it's still sort of grasped that immensity and all of the little coves that are around and kind of the wonder and magic of the lake as well. So
thanks, Linda.
Yeah.
So someone who has visited as a tourist saw it as really reflecting her perception of it. Michael Dugan, you grew up at the Lake of the Ozarks, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on this show?
So the lake is a pretty unique place, and it's really big, and there are a lot of different pockets of types of people, I guess, types of wealth. And so there's the pockets that they depicted in the show that I thought was incredibly accurate. There are that.
How would you describe those pockets?
So the Langmore family, the resort, the little places like that that they show, you know, Laura Linney said the redneck Riviera, that type of people. And I thought they did a really accurate job of portraying that part of the lake. That was very realistic. So
does that terminology bother you, hearing it described as the redneck Riviera?
Maybe a little, because I didn't grow up in that part of it. And a lot of the friends that I've talked to that have watched the show, their initial reaction was, oh my gosh, they made us look like a bunch of rednecks. And even though there is that, element down there, it's not all like that. So they didn't show the broader part, the other little pockets of the lake that are different.
Tell me more about the other pockets, and then I'll get back to the one that we do see.
Sure. They had some overview shots, and they showed some of the bigger homes. You have a lot of those second, third homes that come down from Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, and Omaha, and things like that.
I'm surprised that people really do come from Chicago. They have a lake in Chicago.
I know. Chicago, Iowa, everywhere. People come from all over the place down there. But there are other, you know, middle class type pockets and things like that, upper middle class, nice little neighborhoods. You know, neighborhoods are a little different down there, to where the kids don't go play out on the street and ride their bikes together because there's too many hills and windy roads and it's dangerous. But, you know, we all had a Wave Runner. And so we had our bicycles were Wave Runners, and we traveled to and from the neighborhood kids, you know, around the lake. So
do you think that, I guess that questions of class maybe don't change as much from one place to another as we might imagine they do. It seems like even if you say there is, quote unquote, that element at the Lake of the Ozarks, that even that element would be more complicated than the stereotype. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it got more complicated than the stereotype?
What do you mean by that?
I guess when you say there is that element, mm-hmm. there, when you talk about, oh, they just made us look like a bunch of rednecks, I guess I wonder if that's still kind of dismissive, you know, like if there are human beings who might feel like I'm coming from what they're trying to represent, mm-hmm. and I still don't like being labeled that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. You know, a look in the mirror type thing. You know, I know a lot of the people that were that they were trying to depict. A group of kids I grew up with were in a family just like the Langmores. They didn't have a Ruth, but the rest of the group was like that to a good deal. And I think they would have taken great offense to that, but I thought it was a really accurate representation of a few families at the lake that are just like that.
You know, Chris, having heard a little bit of this, I know you have to go soon, but as someone who worked, you know, to create the show that we're all seeing, can you respond to a little bit of what you're hearing from our in-studio critics so far? Our locals, I guess?
Yeah, no, I'm really appreciative of their perspective, to be honest. And because it's always hard when you're pushing someone, it's extremes and things, or people are doing criminal activity. It always is. You're always worried that the people there are going to think that they're being labeled as all that, you know. I don't think everyone in Northern New Jersey is in the mob yet. If you watch The Sopranos, you might think that they were. Not to compare us to The Sopranos, I'm not that presumptuous, but do you know what I mean? It's like, so.
Yeah, you're telling a dark story.
You're telling a dark story, so you're taking you're not painting everyone with the same brush. You're finding these particular people. I mean, what I think, again, for us, especially you meet them thinking they're one thing. And for us, it was just a matter of continually deepening the characters and any character that comes on the screen, trying to give them their individual dignity, no matter what they're doing, to try to at least understand their perspective. If we feel like if we did that, then we're doing an okay job, you know, and we're trying hard, I swear.
There is a crime family. I think that this term would be a little, would be well applied to the Snells. They're maybe more of Marty and his wife's, I don't know, like they're kind of a powerhouse locally, but they come in an unassuming package in a lot of ways. Can you talk a little bit about them and how they might play into the characterizations of wealth in this place? And then, yeah, and then I'll let you go.
Oh, no, no. I'm happy to talk about the show as much as possible. Yeah, they're kind of straight up frightening. But the Snells, we wanted to play with the mythology. When the lake was started, was first founded, they basically dammed up the rivers and flooded out everybody that was down below. And actually, the term hillbilly comes from the Ozarks, people who fled when the waters came in. They fled to the hills to get away from it. So they're a family that has a chip on their shoulder about the way their family was displaced, but takes great pride in who they were, and in some ways feels that they're sort of the rightful owners of that land, and they've just moved up the hill. So they kind of look down on everyone else, and they sort of excuse their criminality as they were forced to do it by the people that flooded them out, the federal government, the power company, all those things. And that position has just hardened over time and become more ruthless over time. And for us, they're the ones that are kind of fun to play with in that kind of extreme way.
Well, Chris Mundy, runner for Ozark, a new Netflix series, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for watching the show. We really, really appreciate it.
I want to get back to our critics in the studio. Melissa, you talked about the word Ozark as shorthand. I'm also curious what you think about the casting of Jason Bateman as this guy who comes in and makes a lot of assumptions about the locals at the Lake of the Ozarks.
I think that casting is really smart and really interesting, because I think that for a particular generation of media fan, particularly I think Gen X, Jason Bateman kind of symbolizes, kind of wholesome childhood shows. And then also for people who enjoy Arrested Development, seeing him in this absolutely divergent kind of role from the straight man in the Arrested Development family to this very wily criminal mastermind is really smart, because he's a very likable. He has a very likable demeanor, and he's easy to watch. He's a very smooth actor. So I think that casting him in that role was very smart, and I think he does a lot of interesting work with it.
It's surprising in the show every time he does something bad. You're like, Jason Bateman, I can't believe it.
But he does it with such a convincing smile on his face. Like he's just talking you into the worst idea that you've ever committed.
From a familiar perspective with the Ozarks, is it strange for you, Michael, to feel like the Ozarks even are being represented in the media? I mean, we've had Winter's Bone. There have been a few instances, but it's still not like that well known of a place. At least I don't think it is.
I didn't think it was either. And when I heard that they were doing that show, that was incredibly exciting for a lot of us that were from down there. And now listening to Jason Bateman and Laura Linney not only say the names of the towns that we grew up in, but they were so accurate with the names of the subdivisions. I mean, they named my dad's subdivision, one of my friend's subdivisions that we spent a lot of time in. So they really did the research on that. And that was really kind of neat for a lot of us to see that.
No matter how the place is actually being portrayed?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people had a little hard time with the way the place was portrayed, but I didn't. It didn't bother me because that part of the lake totally does exist.
Well, we're off to one last short break this morning on KCUR's Central Standard. We're talking about the Netflix series Ozark and how it represents not just Missouri, but maybe even the urban-rural divide in the Midwest more broadly. Do you find the show insightful, insulting, some combination of the two? Call 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about the Netflix series Ozark, starring Jason Bateman as Marty Bird. He's a guy who's gotten way in over his head laundering money for a drug cartel. He's been kind of banished to the Lake of the Ozarks as a last chance to save himself and his family. Why the Lake of the Ozarks, you ask? Here's Marty's business partner handing him a folded brochure and a map.
Yeah. Seriously, this bad boy has more shoreline, literally, than the entire coast of California. Look at that.
Come on.
Yeah. Every summer, 5 million cash-rich tourists show up, descend on the place, and it's got everything. Rich, poor, bass boats, yachts, condos. You keep this. You hold on to this.
This is mine.
Yeah, you put that on your vision board, okay? This place, I'm telling you, it's got everything. My point is, you can buy land right down to the waterline.
Marty thinks that turning a profit on the backs of the locals will be easy, but Missouri folk in this show play dirty, and they outsmart him at every turn. Michael Dugan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Michael grew up at the Lake of the Ozarks. And Melissa Lenos is here, too. She's the arts contributor here at KCUR and an assistant professor of English at Donnelly College. Hi again, Melissa.
Hi.
Michael, we just got sort of part of what we got in that sales pitch for the Lake of the Ozarks is a pitch for diversity. Like, they've got everything. Rich, poor, yachts, rowboats, Is that your experience of the Ozarks?
Yeah, it's all there. You know, I had a different childhood growing up than the one that was portrayed in the show. Mine was wonderful and perfect and a great family life, and we weren't around the danger and all that. But we had a nice home and a boat and a dock. We lived right on the water. But there is all of that. There's lots and lots of money down there, and there's lots of avenues to do, I think, what they were doing. So,
what about, like, racial diversity? There are some hints at kind of a local racism. I mean, particularly from the Snell family we just met when they they encounter some people from Marty's Mexican drug cartel, and some of the comments that they make are iffy.
Sure. That was something that I struggled a lot with growing up, because there is some racism down there. It's all white. And there, you know, my high school was about 95% white, probably, so...
So you found that part of the portrayal not hard to believe?
Not hard to believe. And I don't want to make it sound like everybody like that is down there that is like that. There is so many good people down there and so many, you know. But there are some racial problems down there for sure.
Let's talk to Jim, who's called from Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I really appreciate the topic. I just wanted to offer the quick comment. My wife and I really enjoyed season one. We're still in the middle of it, so we got a few more episodes to go. But I do not want to say, well, it's a rehash of Breaking Bad. But I do want to say my wife and I could not help but notice the many interesting parallels in the story arc, because here you have this who was once initially a very well-to-do working class type of Caucasian white guy with a family and kids, and he gets himself into this drug cartel involvement, and then he just has to start going in many directions to make it all work. So I just wanted to offer that comment. It's been very interesting.
Do you think that changing the setting, I am curious, though, whether you think changing the setting changes in some way the character or the nature of the problem, or if that's a way of saying, you know, like the dark underbelly of one place looks much like the dark underbelly of another.
I think it's the latter. I think in Breaking Bad, it was Albuquerque and the drug culture. In Ozark, it's a different physical location, but you're still going to that same dark underbelly, yes.
Well, thanks for that call, Jim.
Thank you.
What do you think about that, Melissa?
I think that the connection to Breaking Bad is really visible. In fact, I read some of the things that Mr. Mundy and Mr. Dubuque said in terms of the show's debt that it owes to the anti-hero trend that we're in, right, with characters like Walter White, who are on the surface just absolute criminals doing horrifying things, but they're presented in a way that we end up very sympathetic to them. I think that Tony Soprano is another really good example of that. And if you think back to shows like The Wire, where all aspects of relationships between crime and justice are presented as in some way understandable or even relatable in some cases. I do think that there are some differences there, though, just in terms of Walter White's connection to that community is built in. He's a
Walter White. That's a character from Breaking Bad.
That's correct. So he's a high school teacher who ends up becoming a drug lord. But he's established in that community, and part of the structure of his narrative arc has to do with how his relationship with the community changes from being the high school chemistry teacher to the largest standing drug lord in the region. Whereas the Byrd family descends upon this community just thinking that they're going to absolutely take over all of the illicit money transfer in the area without considering the fact that there may be entities already there who are already doing this in ways that work well for the culture and for the local.
And in ways that are fairly sophisticated.
Exactly.
I, without giving away too much, want to talk about the way religion in this setting is portrayed, because when you think about stereotypes that other parts of the country might have of the rural Midwest, you know, we've already kind of talked about we've got guns, we've got different levels of poverty and wealth to talk about, but the role of religion here is interesting on the lake.
It is interesting. And funnily enough, my dad owns a resort and we had a church service every Sunday on the beach. So right around the water, people would boat up to the church. It wasn't exactly like that. And we obviously weren't running drugs or laundering money, but
which is kind of, you know, in the context of the show, there's a church service on the water mm-hmm. and a minister who's sort of unwittingly part of it.
Right. Yeah. It was a little bit of a bummer to see the religion being portrayed that way in kind of a bad light, because it is a big part of the lake down there with the locals. A lot of church-going people, a lot of really good-hearted, sweet people down there. And so that was a little sad, I guess. But
the idea, I mean, right now, I think in the media, there's so much curiosity about the Midwest and about rural parts of the United States. There's this narrative of a place that was forgotten and that people are sort of frantically trying to learn more about post-election. And I wonder how you think this show might play into some of that kind of curiosity, Melissa.
It's interesting how I'm not sure what the filming schedule was on this, but Laura Linney's character, Wendy Byrd, she's been out of the workforce for a long time because she's been raising her children and they're so wealthy that she hasn't had to work. But before their wealth and their children, she worked for the Obama campaigns. And that's something that comes up. That thread is
his senatorial campaign.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. So she has been very active in Chicago Democratic politics, and she's very liberal, clearly sees herself as a wealthy, white, straight woman feminist in a lot of ways. That sort of seems to be the identity that she most closely connects with. So when she's there, a lot of the negative attitudes that she has are focused on those kinds of political differences There's one very funny moment later in the season when she says something about Obama to one of the locals, and one of the locals says something along the lines of, "He seems like a good enough guy, but I wouldn't have voted for a Muslim." And they both laugh. So it is, again, these differences are foregrounded. But there is also, I think there's an effort at a lot of the kinds of sympathy that we're seeing, that we've been seeing pushed in the past 6 months, of trying to understand where these people are coming from, trying to understand why they feel ignored or forgotten. And I think that there's a lot of caution there and a lot of sensitivity in attempting to explore those stories a little bit. I'm not sure how successful it always is, but there is an effort that you can see there.
Is that, Michael, I mean, is there political diversity at the Lake of the Ozarks?
Not much. I think Camden County voted like 75 or plus percent for Donald Trump. There was a scene where Marty's getting some maps and he says it was for his daughter's global warming project, and the lady at the courthouse kind of rolls her eyes and he says, "Yeah, I know, right?" And that's I thought that was really funny. It is very right wing down there, and I always had a hard time, you know, especially bartending at my dad's restaurant during when President Obama got elected, and hearing the locals, you know, in the off season talk politics was pretty hard for me to keep quiet and just be a bartender.
You know, with your dad having a restaurant in the Lake of the Ozarks, can you talk to me more about the business culture there? Because that is so much of what Marty Bird is trying to manipulate.
Yeah, we got into the restaurant business a little later. He did title insurance and escrow. So we were, you know, seeing Laura Linney, and the sales side of that was neat. So we spent a lot of time with realtors and whatnot, but.
Cause she becomes a realtor.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the restaurant business it's weird down there cause it is so seasonal. You get flooded with people for 3 months out of the year, and that's how you make your money. And then most people close down in the winter.
And then what's the winter like?
Not a lot going on. It is you try to cater to the locals that avoid you. We were more of a popular tourist spot. We had some sand beaches and tiki bars, a little bit bigger restaurant right on the water. And so catering to the locals was harder in the winter because we had to cater to the tourists in the summer, and they didn't care for that, raise prices and things like that. And so in the off season, it was hard at Captain Ron's to do what we, you know, to get those local folks out. And so business is bad in the off season. There's not a lot going on. You go from a staff from 125 to 15.
How do people survive that?
Most people, you know, the workers, mm-hmm. most people go on unemployment during the winter.
Yeah. And that's just considered part of the culture of making it there?
Yeah, you'll have a lot of most of our staff in the summertime comes from colleges, and they come and they stay down there during the summer. But the locals, you know, that don't work during the summer, they have to go on unemployment, or some of them will travel to Florida and go work there and kind of go back and forth. But it's hard.
Do you see that reality that Michael just described, Melissa, reflected in what you see on screen in Ozark?
I think that there's a limited ability to cover those kinds of intricacies when you've got essentially Bateman at one point described it as a 10-hour long film, and that's essentially what you have. So it's a really condensed story, and there's not a lot of space to explore those divisions. I think that, again, there is some effort made. There's a sequence with a strip club where they try to replace some of the local strippers with more attractive external strippers. And so I think that that kind of tries to address these kind of infiltrated mm-hmm. outside workers. So there's an effort there.
Well, if you're watching the show and you want to talk to us about it, you can always tweet us your review. We're at KCURCST. Our time is up. Thanks to our callers for sharing their reviews. And Melissa Leno's Michael Dugan, thank you both for stopping by this morning.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
You can listen back to this show or anything you might have missed on Central Standard at kcur.org/centralstandard. Yesterday, we talked about Kansas City's response to violence in Charlottesville over the weekend, and that's something you might want to check out. kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, we'll talk to Michael Smith on the 10th anniversary of the restaurant bearing his name in the Crossroads. He's got a new Italian menu concept called Finding Guido. Hear the story behind that tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tadhope, and Suzanne Hogan. We get lots of help from intern Danielle Hogarty. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date with Steve Kraske is next. Don't miss it.